So let's pick up then from there, and I'll read the next little passage here. So again, page 3, the beginning, I think the fourth paragraph there. This being so, what is expressed by Buddha ancestors is not leaving the monastery for a lifetime. Even if you are speechless, you have expression. Do not assume a speechless person cannot express. It's not that one who can express is not speechless. A speechless person can also express. The speechless voice is heard. Listen to the speechless voice. Remember that phrase, not leaving the monastery for a lifetime, is referring to the full expression of our life, that this life is our monastery. We give voice to our life. So our Dharma ancestors continuously express the Dharma. Even those ones who were silent. So in, for example, there's in two of the main koan collections, we find the story of the famous Chinese Zen teacher named Gute. When he was asked to teach the Dharma, he would raise a single finger. I think it was probably this finger, not the middle finger. I think it was this one. Anyway, one day a visitor came when Gute was away. So the visitor asked Gute's young attendant, what was the teaching of Gute? The young attendant also then raised a single finger. And then later hearing this, Gute, when he was back, called his attendant into his room and then grabbed the attendant's hand and mimed cutting off the finger. And the attendant then acted as if in pain and ran away. Gute called out to him. And when the attendant turned around, Gute raised a single finger. At that moment, the young attendant awakened, as the story goes. When Gute was about to die, years later, his last words were, I obtained one finger Zen from my master, Tendu, and used it all my life, but did not exhaust it. Even if you are speechless, you have expression. Do not assume that a speechless person cannot express. I noticed I said mimed here. The actual texts don't say mimed at all. But I'm almost positive all these, most of these, kind of seemingly violent actions by the teachers were mimed. I don't know of any Zen teachers that carry knives and stuff around with them. So, but now we come to one of my favorite lines in the whole text. The speechless voice is heard. Listen to the speechless voice. In our Zazen practice, we listen to the speechless voice of sentient and unsentient beings all around us. At one point in my practice, this was quite a few years ago now, a teacher gave me a koan. What is the sound of one hand? And out of her kindness, told me one way to work with this koan is to listen to all the sounds that came to me. Without noting them or labeling them, just a kind of deep listening. Just a wide, open, energetic listening. So I did that for a little while. And a little bit later, I was told also then, listen to the spaces between the sounds. Wholehearted listening and listen with the whole body. That was Zazen period after Zazen period, listening to the speechless voice. A wonderful expression of practice. If able, maybe at the end of this retreat, you can go out and you can listen to the speechless voice of the snow. Just listen wholeheartedly with the whole body. So Dogen continues, without being a speechless person, how can you encounter a speechless person? How can you speak with someone who is speechless? When you are already a speechless person, how can you encounter one? How do you speak with one? Investigate this way and thoroughly study someone who is speechless. Well, you know, what questions Dogen leaves for us all throughout his writing, these great questions for us to hold in our own practice. I was thinking about this. You know, for most of us, all day long, every hour of our day is filled with chatter. Chatter that's going on within our own minds, and also the chatter, the voices we hear around us, the radio, TV, work, colleagues. And so I was wondering how do we encounter silence? How is it when speech is not possible? When I first went to Japan, over 40 years ago now, well over 40 years ago now, yikes, I did not speak any Japanese. And yet, I had to navigate my way, bus and trains, across the country to a small city. And at that time in Japan, there was very little English signage. And I was just a kid. At that time, I remember the journey being both frightening and a very powerful teaching. A teaching of connection. And that teaching was mostly of a speechless expression. Person after person came forward, guiding me, giving me assistance, helping me, even though mostly we could not communicate. I was able to tell them the city I was aiming towards, and not much more. And one person even offered me a place to stay at their home for the night, because I had missed a connecting train. I had to take, I think, about 3 trains to get there, because the last connecting train had already left. But of course, in this case, the speechless person that Dogen is talking about is you and me. Sitting on the cushion, we are speechless. Bowing to each other in the Zendo, we are speechless. And also making a cup of tea for ourselves, we are speechless. Speechless, we encounter each other. And speechless, we encounter ourselves. Speechless, yes, and yet something is expressed. Some intimacy is recognized. So let us follow Dogen's advice and study this thoroughly. So now we're going to move on to the last section of this. And we begin with a story. In the assembly of Shuifeng, great master Zhenjue, there was a monk who built a thatched roofed hermitage at the foot of a mountain. He did not shave for years. And that probably means both the head and the face, but particularly the head. He did not shave for years. No one knew what was happening in the hermitage. And his life in the mountain was solitary. He would go to a nearby valley brook, fetch water with the wooden dipper he himself had made, and drink it. Indeed, he was a valley drinker. As he spent days and months in this way, his practice was noticed by another monk who went to see him and asked, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from India?" The hermit said, "The valley is deep. The dipper handle is long." Shuifeng Yizun was one of the most influential Chan or Zen teachers at the end of the Tang Dynasty, when the Tang government was kind of losing control of China, and the official support of Buddhism was rapidly declining. In fact, there was protests against the Buddhist establishment. But although Buddhism in general suffered during this time, Chan or Zen survived quite well because of the tendency to build temples way in the mountains and small hermitages, again, way deep in the mountains, away from big cities, large population centers. So here in this story, we have an example of an anonymous monk building a small hut, probably not far or very far from where Shuifeng's temple was, where he was teaching. It's not unusual, and was not unusual during that time, for a Chinese Chan practitioner to spend time as a hermit, somewhere, usually in a wild place. Bill Porter, the American translator, has translated a lot of classical Chinese texts, wrote about contemporary Chinese hermits. In his book, Road to Heaven, Encounters with Chinese Hermits. And it makes for a really good reading. If you haven't read that, I found it quite fascinating. So Dogen tells us this monk lived a solitary and simple life, taking his needs from the valley in which he lived. And then one day, a monk, hearing about this hermit, came forward and asked the standard Zen question, "What's the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from India?" Which is Zen speak for, what's your understanding of the way? How do you express the Dharma? And the hermit replied, "The valley is deep, the dipper handle is long." Now, what do you make of his answer? Perhaps valley is indicating the immensity of life, the totality of life. And maybe the dipper is the monk's continuous, unbroken practice, continuous, unbroken expression in this great valley of life itself. Or perhaps the monk was simply using an everyday object, a wooden dipper, as a way to express his Dharma. That's possible too. That often we see that in Zen stories. Just like the dialogue between the famous Chinese teacher Zhaozhou and a new monk who had arrived at Zhaozhou's monastery. The monk said, "Oh, I have just entered the monastery," right? Eager beaver kind of young guy. "Please teach me. Please teach me." And Zhaozhou said, "Have you eaten your rice gruel?" The monk said, "Yes, I have." And Jethro said, "Wash your bowl." Expressions of the Dharma, everyday objects. But I don't know what this monk meant. What does it say to you? Anyway, the story continues. The monk, the visiting monk, the monk who had dropped by to check on the hermit, was so shocked that he did not bow, nor did he ask for teaching. He went up to the mountain and told Shuifeng the story. Hearing this, Shuifeng said, "This is amazing. If he's like that, I should go over and check him out." What Shuifeng meant was that the hermit seemed amazingly accomplished, but he wanted to examine how he was doing. So one day, Shuifeng had his attendant monk carry a razor and rushed to the hermitage. As soon as Shuifeng saw the hermit, he said, "If you have expression, I will not shave your head." So now, remember, the hermit monk did not shave his head, probably because, you know, not being in a monastery where others would see him, and not having access to hot water, he thought best just to let his hair grow. Shuifeng is impressed and decided to visit the hermit. And I wonder why. Why Shuifeng felt compelled to check the hermit out? What was he looking for? And why did he begin with such a challenge? Maybe it just makes for a good story. But anyway, let's see what Dogen says here. "Be aware of this statement. Shuifeng's words sound like he would not shave the hermit's head if the hermit had expression. In other words, if the hermit could express the Dharma. How is it? Is it that if the expression was true expression, Shuifeng would not shave the hermit's head? You should listen to this expression with the power of listening." Just like we talked about before. Deep listening, whole body. "Speak about it to those who have the power of listening." Hearing Shuifeng's words, the hermit washed his head and came back to Shuifeng. "Is this bringing expression or beyond expression?" Shuifeng shaved his head. Seems like a simple story. And this rather hirsute, hairy hermit seemed rather meek at first glance. In other Zen stories, monks, when challenged to express the truth, answer with kicks, shouts, punches, putting their sandals on their head, uttering some what seemingly seems like a non sequitur, like 3 pounds of flax or the oak tree in the garden. So how about in the case of this hermit and Shuifeng? Well, Dogen is clearly impressed with this story, and he continues, "This story is indeed like the emergence of an Undambara blossom, rare to encounter and rare to hear," meaning the story. "It is beyond the realm of 7 or 10 sages. It is beyond the understanding of 3 or 7 wise beings, teachers of sutras and treatises, or practitioners of supernormal powers cannot measure it. To encounter the emergence of a Buddha is to hear a story such as this." Well, I don't think you can get much more impressed than that. So what is the meaning of Shuifeng's words? "If you have expression, I will not shave your head." When people who have not yet attained expression hear this, those with capacity may be astonished, and those without may be confused. Shuifeng did not ask the hermit about a Buddha, and the hermit did not speak of the way. Shuifeng did not ask him about samadhi, and the hermit did not speak of dharani, kind of mystical chants. Although Shuifeng's words may have sounded like a question, they were expression. Examine this thoroughly. Sometimes a question is not a question, or not limited to questionness. The everyday greeting, for example, like how are you, is more acknowledgement really than inquiry, as is the answer I'm fine, even when often we're not fine. Shuifeng did not ask the typical question about Dharma. His question by itself was expressing the Dharma truth. Beginning a conversation with words that were beyond words. Going directly to the intimacy of the moment, like the opening moves of a dance partner. At least I believe that's how Dogen interprets this, how he saw this, what he gleaned from this story. Dogen continues, in this situation, when the hermit was challenged by Shuifeng's expression, he was not confused, because he had genuine understanding. Without hiding his style of practice, he washed his head and came back to Shuifeng. This is a Dharma realization, which even a Buddha with a Buddha's wisdom cannot get near. It is emergence of a Buddha body, expounding of Dharma, awakening of sentient beings, and coming with a washed head. This is the flavor of our school. What are the miracles of life? Well, an old expression, chop wood, carry water. What are the miracles of our life today? Maybe scrubbing carrots, answering emails,
shoveling snow.
Miracles of this life. So this hermit expressed the Dharma through washing his hair, preparing it to be shaved off. And he forgoes the typical dramatic Zen responses that he probably would have heard about or read about in his earlier training. Instead, he expresses fully his truth by following the monastic custom. Now, when I first read this, I was really moved by the simplicity and wholeheartedness and directness of his response. And we see this occasionally in our other Zen stories. One example is Daizu Huihai, one of our Chinese ancestors again in the Tang Dynasty, was asked by an expert in the Vinaya, in the rules of that governed the life of a monk and nun. He was asked by this expert, when one seeks to follow the way, is there a particular manner in which she should behave? There is, Daozu said. Please tell me about it, said the Vinaya teacher. When one is hungry, one eats. When one is tired, one sleeps. So Dogen continues. If Xuefeng had not been a true person, not a deeply awakened person, he would have thrown down the razor and burst into laughter. Kind of a more typical Zenny response. However, he was a true person and with great capacity, so he shaved the hermit's head. Indeed, if Xuefeng and the hermit had not been only a Buddha and a Buddha, it would not have happened this way. If they had not been one Buddha in two Buddhas, it would not have happened this way. If they had not been a dragon and a dragon, it would not have happened this way. Although a dragon's pearl is tirelessly spared by the dragon, it naturally falls into the hand of a person of understanding. So what Dogen is telling us here is about intimacy. When we're truly intimate, it flows. Nothing special needs to be done. We follow our life. We follow the lives of those around us. They were, as he puts it, a Buddha and a Buddha, or a dragon and a dragon. How simple. Like the hermit monk, a Xuefeng does not make his response a personal expression. Look at me, you know, I'm the great teacher here, so I'm going to roar like a lion, throw the razor down. But he goes beyond and allows the full expression of Dharma in the ritual of shaving the monk's head. I can see, you know, how Dogen really appreciates this story, because it turns upside down the usual responses we find in most Zen stories. Full expression in washing hair. Full expression in the ritual shaving of the head. And what about for us? For us, maybe it's full expression when we bow together. Maybe it's full expression when we chant in service. Or maybe it's full expression when we simply do one of the jobs in the Zendo. Somebody hits the han, somebody keeps time, somebody sweeps the floor. And Dogen continues, know that Xuefeng checked out the hermit and the hermit encountered Xuefeng. With expression and beyond expression, one got his head shaved and the other shaved his head. Thus, good friends of expression have a way to visit unexpectedly. Friends beyond expression have a place to be acquainted without expectation. Where there is the practice of getting acquainted, expression is actualized. So this story, and I think Dogen sums it up here at the end, this maybe the whole fascicle, is about true intimacy. We express, not just something from ourselves, we express to the world, we express to others, we're open to others' expression, we receive it. We are, as Dogen says here, good friends. Meeting the other. Just being in another's presence in itself is expression. The complete, or perhaps I should say the full expression of life, the full expression of the truth of our life, as it is in this moment, free of expectation and artifice, allows us to bring forth the appropriate response. And maybe that appropriate response is simply, let's have a cup of tea. So I'd like to end this kind of talk on this fascicle with a poem by the Japanese Soto monk Ryokan Taigu, who lived in the second half of the 700s to the early first half of the 1800s. And it connects all the way back to the finger pointing at the moon story that I brought up in our first meeting. It's a wonderful poem. There are a number of translations of it, and the one I'm going to use is one by Okumura, Shohaku Okumura, who I think most of you know actually was the first teacher for Kate and for me. Anyway, it's from his book called Ryokan Interpreted. Relying upon a finger, we see the moon. Relying on the moon, we understand the finger. Moon and finger are neither the same nor different. This expedient analogy is for guiding beginners. Having seen reality as it is, there is neither moon nor finger. The moon, the finger, words, making a cup of tea, washing the dishes. How do we each allow ourselves to express our reality, our truth, the Dharma? Okumura Roshi points out in his commentary to this poem that Katagiri Daien Roshi, one of the main Japanese Zen teachers who first came to North America and died in 1990, he also founded the Minnesota Zen Center, titled his first book, Returning to Silence. Returning to Silence. And apparently in that book, and one of his most famous or noted teachings was, shut your mouth, just sit. Shut your mouth, just sit. Well, that's a pretty heavy title. But then the title of his second book was, you have to say something. You have to say something. So how interesting, eh? Shut your mouth and just sit, and yet you have to say something. Isn't that our life? We each find our way to express what is within our deep silence. The task is to be careful, to be aware that we're not just giving voice or action to something that is arising from our self-centered place. It's not just coming from an habitual conditioning that we have. It's coming from somewhere true. And by true, I mean full of life. Relying upon a finger, we see the moon. Relying upon the moon, we understand the finger. Finger and moon are neither the same nor different. This expedient analogy is for guiding beginners. Having seen reality as it is, there is neither moon nor finger.